Thank you. Good afternoon. May it please the court. I'm Alan Poe, registration number 7641, and with me at council's table is Rachel Poe, registration number 41318. We are with the Poe Law Office, LLC. We're appearing on behalf of the appellant, Kinder Morgan CO2 Company, LP, which we will refer to as Kinder Morgan. The appeal before the court today raises two significant issues, and I would like to address both issues in my argument this afternoon. I'd like to reserve 3 or 4 minutes for a rebuttal, depending on how long my initial argument takes. I'd like to begin with what we believe is a dispositive issue, which is whether the Colorado property tax statute authorized the county assessor in this case to increase retroactively the value that was assigned for tax year 2008 to oil and gas properties that are at issue here. This is a question of law, which this court reviews de novo. I'd like to emphasize that there's no dispute that the oil and gas leasehold lands and properties were valued and assessed for tax year 2008. There's also no dispute that the action that the county assessor took that's at issue here was a retroactive increase in the value that was assigned to those previously assessed properties. This court has said in at least 5 reported cases that retroactive increases in the value of previously assessed property are not authorized by the statute. Most recently, this court said that about a year and a half ago in a case called Marsico Capital Management, LLC. The court has applied that rule in the context of various types of property, including real property, personal property, and including oil and gas properties such as that are at issue here. That was the Cabot Petroleum Corporation case that we cited in our briefs, a 1992 decision. In fact, that Cabot Petroleum Corporation case is directly on point with this issue in this case, and it has been the law for over 20 years. We believe the county board is asking you to issue a decision that's in direct conflict with this court's decision in the Cabot Petroleum Corporation case. The county board's position appears to be based almost entirely on section 39-2-109-1K of the Colorado Revised Statutes. That statute specifies that the property tax administrator may publish guidelines concerning audit and compliance review of oil and gas properties. It does not delegate to the administrator the legislative responsibility of authorizing assessments. Assessments are different from audits. In fact, the county board in its brief acknowledges that the statutory language in 39-2-109-1K does not expressly authorize the administrator to issue guidelines with respect to assessments. The county board acknowledges that the plain meaning of the term audit does not encompass assessments, but the county board argues that the statutory language implicitly authorizes the administrator to adopt guidelines authorizing assessments. The problem is that in the tax area, taxation by implication is not acceptable. If the legislature intended to authorize the administrator to perform a specifically legislative function of defining when assessments can be issued, then the legislature would have had to have done so if it legally could, and we've raised in our recent questions whether such a delegation would even be constitutional, but it would need to do so specifically. It would not use the term audit to authorize the administrator to in turn authorize assessors to issue assessments.
Mr. Poe, as I understand your argument, and if we accept this argument, aren't we then having to assume that the legislature authorized an audit procedure but afforded no remedy for such audit unless it disclosed fraudulent or willful misconduct? This is the issue that's troubling me. How do you have this procedure and no remedy for it?
And I would say in response to that, I mean, an audit and an assessment are 2 different things. There are all kinds of reasons why audits are authorized. In our brief, we went through a number of reasons why audits might be authorized. For example, as you pointed out, under the statute, if filings are willfully false and misleading, then the assessor can retroactively assess the property. So you can audit to determine whether the filings are willfully false and misleading. You can also audit to determine whether properties have in fact been wholly omitted. In other words, did the operator report all of the properties or only some of the properties? If they only reported some of the properties, there is a right to assess. Audits are performed, for example, as we pointed out in the briefs, there's an entire chapter in the assessor's reference library, the manuals that govern property taxes, dealing with personal property tax audits, and yet personal property cannot be assessed retroactively for value, just like oil and gas property cannot. Assessors may audit after they receive the reporting, before the initial assessment comes out, both in the personal property area and in the oil and gas area. Assessors can look at a reporting and say, we think something odd's going on here, we're going to issue a best information available assessment or a high assessment, and then audit to determine whether that's correct or not.
Let me follow up a little bit on what my colleague's saying, because I have a similar concern. I certainly understand the willful misleading that exception out there, but what I hear you saying is when the auditor gets there and they determine that it's sloppy but not willfully false and misleading, that there's no recourse at that point. Is that true?
Okay, depending upon the circumstances, if it's not willfully false and misleading, if all the property has been reported, if the assessor has accepted the initial filing and issued an assessment, then just like is the case with real property, office buildings, your home, just as is the case with personal property, which is also self-reported and subject to audit, that assessment, once it becomes final, is not to be retroactively increased in terms of value. That's the rule, and that's the rule for all property. I mean, that's true for your home. If the assessor makes a mistake and undervalues your home, if in the personal property area a taxpayer doesn't report all the costs or forgets a cost or something, the auditor, the assessor can come in and audit. They can then make those adjustments going forward. They can tell the taxpayer in the future, you should not be taking these deductions, you should not be making these adjustments. But once that assessment is final, it is final for all purposes. The value cannot be increased after that point in time. And that's what the Cabot Petroleum Corporation case said.
I don't know if you argued this before the Board of Assessment Appeals, but did they talk about that Cabot Petroleum case? I mean, it seems to me that they would have had some constraints on their ability to ignore it.
One would think so, Your Honor, but no. We certainly briefed and argued this exact point to the Board of Assessment Appeals. The Board of Assessment Appeals order is very brief on this point. It says, we don't agree, and we think this statute that authorizes audits is sufficient. And that's all the board said on that point. There was no further analysis. But yes, this was briefed and argued extensively at the Board of Assessment Appeals. And if you look at the record, I think all the closing arguments are in there, as well as the opening statements. I'd like to move on very quickly, because I don't want to use up all my time. But even if the statute could be deemed to authorize the administrator to in turn authorize assessors to issue assessments as opposed to merely performing audits, which we don't think would be constitutional, and we certainly don't think the statute does, the guidelines themselves do not specifically say you can assess in these circumstances. The county board points to certain language in the guidelines that says you can issue special notices of valuation, you can issue tax bills to cover the taxes, but it doesn't ever say we are going to add to the statutory authorization for assessments these other situations. So the guidelines themselves don't specifically authorize assessments in any particular case, contrary to what I think the county board would argue. We believe there's no statutory authority for the assessor's retroactive increase in the value that was assigned to the oil and gas properties here. and we believe that the court should follow the longstanding 20-plus-year-old Cabot Petroleum Corporation precedent, reverse the order of the Board of Assessment Appeals, and remand the case to the board with instructions to grant the refunds that Kinder Morgan requested as they were amended at the hearing. I would like to very briefly address a second question. If for some reason the court determines that on that dispositive issue that the assessor is permitted to not only audit, which is the only word that the legislature used, but also assess, the assessment itself is incorrect. I want to emphasize here a couple of points. Number one, the interest owners, including not just Kinder Morgan, but also ExxonMobil, which owns a big chunk of the McElmo Dome unit, and which was not found by the Board of Assessment Appeals to be a related party. Chevron, Oxy, Trinity, which are other working interest owners, who were not found to be related parties with the pipeline company. The royalty owners, who bear a portion of the cost. The other working interest owners, who bear a portion of the cost. All of those companies paid the tariff to the Cortez Pipeline Company. So they actually paid the amounts that Kinder Morgan reported for the transportation of the CO2. The county disallowed a portion of those payments in its audit. And it disallowed that because, according to it, Kinder Morgan and the pipeline company were related parties. And under the guidelines, if you're related parties, different rules apply. But the important thing here is that unless they are related parties, as defined in the guidelines specifically authorize the deduction of amounts actually paid. And even if Kinder Morgan and the pipeline company were considered to be related parties, which we don't believe they are for the reasons that are spelled out in brief, even if that was the case, Kinder Morgan's percentage interest in the total CO2 is only 37.2%. All these other parties, ExxonMobil, the other working interest owners, who bear or own a portion of the cost, are also not being able to deduct all of that as a result of the finding by the board, which is a legal finding, that the two parties, the Kinder Morgan and the pipeline company, were related parties. We think the board didn't complete its work, even after it found incorrectly in our view that Kinder Morgan and the Cortez Pipeline Company were related. The board should have gone on and analyzed the guidelines as we spelled out in briefs and applied any such finding only to Kinder Morgan's portion of the CO2.
And you have 2 minutes left.
I would like to reserve the remainder for below. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Matthew Montgomery of the law firm Duffer, Woldeck, Milberg, and Crone. My attorney registration number is 44039. My firm represents the Montezuma County Board of Commissioners. I think what I'd like to start by emphasizing here is that this is an oil and gas tax case. And oil and gas taxes have one important distinction from real property taxes generally. And that's that oil and gas taxes are based on self-reported forms. The oil and gas companies at the end of the tax year turn in a form that tells you how much oil and gas they produced. Real property generally, something like your house, is valued based on the assessor. The assessor goes and he looks at public data and he comes up with the value for your house. And so this distinction between self-reported and this distinction between the assessor doing it is why they created, the legislature created an audit provision in the statute, which is that this self-reported form, the county should have an ability to go look into the numbers behind that and figure out what the oil and gas company is telling them is correct.
Mr. Montgomery?
Yes.
Your counterpart says that Cabot 1 is dispositive. Could you address that, please?
Sure. I don't believe that Cabot 1 has any real applicability to this case. What happened in Cabot 1, the finding of that case, was that the proceeds from a lawsuit were not omitted property. So basically, the oil and gas company got involved with a lawsuit with another oil and gas company. They ended up winning several million dollars. And what then happened is the county assessor went and said, those extra $4 or $5 million that you got from that lawsuit, those were omitted from the taxes. That's additional income that you should be taxed on, essentially. And what they said in Cabot was that the tax assessor can't just go and change the taxes on his own volition because of that. This case is entirely different because this case occurred pursuant to the audit procedures that are outlined in the ARL and that are provided for by Section 109.1K.
But wasn't what was common between this case and Cabot the fact that it related to the value of the property and what tax have been assessed based upon that value and whether there could be a retroactive change in that?
Well, I think one, that's addressed, I think what that's really most aptly addressed is that if you look at the history of how the audit procedures happened, they really were created by two separate legislative acts. There was the 1991 Act that added in this 109.1K, which was, it's the duty of the property tax assessors, the property tax administrator to create the guidelines. But the year before was the first time that the legislature actually addressed audits, and this was, I forget the citation here, House Bill 90-1018. And in that one, basically the legislature looked to create audits or sort of incentivize counties to do audits for the first time. And in that statute, they basically specifically define omitted or oil and gas, I think it's basically underreporting of oil and gas or the selling price of oil and gas as omitted property. And so in that 1990 bill, the legislature specifically contemplated that retroactive taxes could be implemented through the normal procedure because it defined what was discovered by audits to be specifically omitted property and not omitted value. And so my contention would be that if this is not just a straightforward application of administrative law, a gap in the statute that was filled by the administrative agency, that this House Bill 19 from 1990 basically removes all doubt on that front because it specifically defines the value here as a type of omitted property so that it could be retroactively assessed.
And I take it because you didn't cite any cases that no appellate decision has up to now agreed with your interpretation.
To the best of my knowledge, no appellate decision has addressed the audit, period. And so this is really, in many respects, or in all respects, a novel issue before this court. Another point I'd like to address just briefly opposing counsel has talked about taxation by implication. And I think with taxation by implication, he's really conflating two ideas. What taxation by implication says is that all taxes have to be basically come from a legislative enactment. Here we have a legislative enactment, which is the 109.1K, saying it's the duty, it's an express delegation of authority. Where taxation by implication comes up is when a taxing official acts basically without statutory authority and says, well, there's nothing in the statutes that say I can't do this. And that's where that argument, there's no taxation by implication, has been applied. I think that this is true of that Skidmore versus Root case that's set in the briefs. And I would also just draw your attention, there's a case out of Pennsylvania that 85 Atlantic 2nd 17, Bolton versus Stark, that also I think does a decent job of sort of explicating this idea of taxation by implication. It's just a short, succinct case from 1951. I also think I would like to point out that my opposing counsel raises this idea of constitutionality. That issue has not been raised in this case, it was not raised below. So I don't believe that that's an appropriate issue to address. Although I would think that the authority of the legislature to delegate the non-delegation doctrine, as long as the legislature provides a standard, the legislature can delegate authority. I don't think there is a constitutional issue here, but again, I would say that it hasn't been raised before this court. Then I think turning to the related party issue briefly, I would suggest that basically what they're here to do on that issue is just relitigate a factual issue that they lost in front of the BAA. Their burden of proof at the BAA hearing was to prove by a preponderance of the evidence that the assessment issued by the tax assessor was incorrect. The BAA found that they did not, by a preponderance of the evidence, find that they had met that burden of the proof. And the reason was is that basically Kinder Morgan is a partner in the Cortez Pipeline Company. Mobil, or ExxonMobil, is a partner. And so therefore, the BAA found that they were related parties based on the definition of related parties in the ARL, which is that individuals who are connected by a partnership are related parties.
Isn't there a problem, though, that these aren't individuals that we're talking about? Or?
Well, the tax code specifically defines persons to include corporations, entities, business entities. And individual, to me, when you look up the dictionary definition, is a single person. And so I don't know how you could read individual to be anything other than a person. And so my argument would be that that is how it was interpreted, and that's the interpretation. I guess if there are no other questions, I'll just close by saying, our opinion is that this is just a straightforward application of administrative law. The legislature left a gap to the administrative agency. The administrative agency did its job. It filled the gap with an audit provision, audit guidelines. And that to overturn that, you would basically have to determine that the property tax administrator abused its authority, went beyond its discretion, acted arbitrarily and capriciously in basically creating an audit guidelines that served the purposes of collecting taxes. It seems to me that that's the purpose of the property tax code, should be the purpose of audits too. Otherwise, the related party issue is just a factual issue that was tried at the lower level, and it was decided as a matter of fact. If there are no other questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, members of the court. I'll try to address the issues as quickly as possible. First of all, I think it is clear that Cabot 1 is controlling. I won't read all the provisions in Cabot, but if you read that case, it's very clear that they addressed exactly this issue. Could value, the retroactive value increases be applied to oil and gas properties? And they said no. They even noted that there was a possibility of windfall that said we cannot, without engaging in judicial legislation, find statutory authorization for the retroactive assessments. And they even noted that there was a certain benefit to that, which is a finality for the property taxes for a year. As I said, each year is a separate year, so for the next year that can be a different issue. We do not agree that the 1990 legislation in any way affected Cabot or that it defined under-reporting to be omitted property. That 1990 legislation was adopted 2 years before Cabot was decided by the Court of Appeals. So that legislation was on the books when Cabot was decided by the Court of Appeals in 1992. With respect to the constitutionality issue, we did raise, as a result of the argument that the county board made, that the legislature had essentially delegated the property tax administrator the authority to allow assessments. In our reply brief, we pointed out that that would be an illegal delegation of authority, and we cited a case, Dixon versus Zick, Z-I-C-K, on page 6 of our reply brief in support of that position. With respect to the factual issue, that this is a factual determination by the Board of Assessment Appeals on the related party issue, that's simply not the case. The facts were not in dispute. Kinder Morgan was a 50% partner in the Cortez Pipeline Company. That's the fact that the board relied on. The application of the rules in the guidelines to those facts is a question of law on which this court reviews de novo. And finally, the comment that because this is self-reported is different, that's not true. Personal property is also self-reported and is subject to the same rules that we're asking to be applied to the oil and gas properties. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both for your fine arguments. case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.